Technorama episode 577. It's episode 577. And welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. Thanks for joining us. This is the podcast, like I said, all things geek. We have fun. We hang out. We find weird stories. We share them with you. Who's the we? Well, I'm Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. And joining me just on the other side of that virtual table is my good buddy, Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing well. How about you, Chuck?
A little frustrated at the technical difficulties to get a podcast running tonight between walking in and the soundboard wasn't working. Oh, well, somehow the mute button on that channel got hit. Then it's just all over the place. Rebooting the router.
Well, look back at all the things we used to do back in the day trying to make a podcast work. So you know what?
We've layered a lot of things on here. I was even tweaking with the lights because we swapped out some of the lights this weekend.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. We needed to get some new CFLs for the vanity in the bathroom. And they're really, really short. They're like tight coils of they'll go around like twice. Can't find them. Everything else is a little too long. And I don't want the bulb sticking out beyond, you know, the glass fixture. So I asked the guy, I said, do you have any more of these? It was the same brand. You could even read the SKU right off of the bulb that I brought in. And he said, they don't make those anymore. I said, well, what CFL do you recommend? He found some short little LEDs. And I said, ooh, LEDs are cooler. And the studio gets hot.
Literally cooler.
Yeah, cool. They're cool. That's why I got them. So we've been playing musical instruments with the light bulbs in this house going, look, this one doesn't match. It's short. We can use it over here. That one's not even the right color. Let's put it over there. And we've got a total of about 15 lights in this studio. And now six of them, or five of them at the moment, are LEDs. So we're working on keeping the cooling, the temperature down in here.
Yeah, well, I think that's long needed. In that room.
Oh, heavens, yes. You've been in here. It gets really hot.
I've got LED bulbs in here now. I got the Wyze bulbs, the Wi-Fi enabled bulbs. I got some around the house. And they're really cool. You know, I wake up in the morning before I even walk out of the bathroom. You know, Kim's like, I get up before Kim does.
Yeah.
So I'm in the bathroom. I turn on the lights downstairs before I even walk downstairs. I love it. And then I got a they just came out with a new plug.
Yes, I saw that.
I've got that on my turtle downstairs, so turns on his light at 7:15 in the morning.
You got it on the turtle. You got a pet turtle?
We do. We had two Russian tortoises. One passed away not too long ago, probably 3 months, 4 months.
Isn't that an oxymoron, a Russian tortoise? Sorry.
Huh?
They're so slow, they can't be Russian. Get it? Russian.
Oh. Tortoise.
Wow. If I have to spell it out, never mind.
Yeah. Now, there are two Russian tortoises, and like I said, one of them passed away a few months ago, but we still got one, and it was an old fish tank, and he's in there, and I got a light that comes on.
Well, that's the problem. You need a tortoise tank, not a fish tank.
It's a tortoise tank now, yes.
Should we get on with the feedback?
Anyway, yes.
All right. We have some feedback. We asked our annual, our weekly question of the week.
Were you? Annual?
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
Every day.
We get our voicemail annually. Well, no thanks, Facebook. I don't need a chat while I read these. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Ding dong.
So our question of the week is, finish this. If I could send a 140-character message to my younger self, I'd write. And we got a lot of comments on this. Weber Baker started out with the obvious one that I thought of is, buy into the Apple IPO.
Right.
Honestly, how much money did I have when I was a teenager for investing in stocks?
$20. If you invested $20 in the Apple IPO.
Well, it wasn't even $20 a share at that point, but I'm sure it went pretty low at some point.
Wasn't it 16 or something like that when they started?
Well,
they opened.
The thing is, eventually you're going to need to exercise that stock and you're going to pay a lot of taxes on it. So,
yeah,
you know, it's all fine and dandy to say, hey, I bought 5,000 shares of Apple when it opened. It's worth nothing till you sell it. So you can't really, anyway.
Oh, here you go. It was actually $22.
Okay, so $20 wouldn't have got you a share. Mike Will said, be true to yourself. You can still do weather without being a meteorologist. John Miller Jr. says, go to the gym and avoid your ex. She will cheat on you.
Wow. Okay.
Wait a minute. If you avoid your ex, you got to say avoid, you know, don't go near that person and make her be your ex.
Well, no, see, the thing is, she doesn't ever go to the gym, so that's where you go to avoid her.
Oh, okay. Ishmael says, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, yes, yes, no, yes. So he's giving a whole bunch of answers to random questions you don't know yet.
Sounds like a life cheat code. do that, up, down, yes, yes, no, no, yes.
Diana Lewis says, the pursuit of perfection is futile. Just do your best and don't worry about the rest. I like that. That's often what I would say to the girls when I dropped them off for school is, do your best. The rest will take care of itself. And I think they turned out all right. Crazy Joe says, don't go into the forbidden zone. You won't like what you find. JC Hutchins says, don't trust Chuck Tomasi.
I've been saying that forever.
To which my eldest sister Suzette says, I trust Chuck.
Nice.
Oh, what else do we have? Clinton says, calm down. Oh, then we wouldn't have a podcast. Jay Langjen says,
we gotta get wound up about something, don't you?
Jay Langjen says, don't listen to that drama teacher. She has no idea what she's talking about. Oh, man, lots of good answers in here if you want to find out more. Let's see. Tiffany says, go to school and be a nurse. Now. Just turned out good for her.
There is no spoon. There is no spoon.
Michael Slobodnik, there is no spoon. My cousin John says, life is a marathon, not a sprint. Allow your definition of a success to change as you go, because it will. Follow your passion and your skills.
And I think he's pushing the 140 character limit there.
I was going to say the same thing. Like, close, but no cigar. Did you repost this or not this week?
No, I did not. Okay. I was lazy.
Well, thank you, everybody who responded. The question will still be there. If you're following one of us on Facebook, you'll usually see our question of the week. We'll have another one for you at the end of the show, and then we'll post it. Whoops. Yeah. That's not the right music. That's the right music. There. Thank you.
There we go.
And then we'll get into our history segment.
Hooray.
Beep. I don't think anybody's sticking around on Facebook. It's probably going... That's fine. We're going to keep recording this.
It says two people are viewing.
Probably you and me. And then it just said interrupted again.
Well, actually, you and I both look like Max Headroom. It's right, jumping around.
I've backed this thing down to 720. It's like, you know what? I'm not going to worry about it. We're going to record a podcast and a Patreon show. Let's do the history.
All right.
Let's unhistory something. On this day in history for October 2nd, 2019, this is the 275th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. That means, oh my, there's only 90 days left. We are inside that last quarter mark to the year.
Oh. Yeah, you go do your Christmas shopping.
It was on this date in 1535 that Jacques Cartier discovers the present site of Montreal.
And it was 94 years ago today that John Baird performs his... the first test of a working television system.
Good news, everyone. Oh, I thought, no, that was Farnsworth.
Yeah, and look where it got us today.
That same date in 1955, ENIAC, one of the earliest electronic general purpose computers, is shut down.
And it was 60 years ago today that Rod Serling's anthology series, The Twilight Zone, premieres on CBS. The first episode is Where Is Everybody?
Picture if you will.
It's kind of what we're asking Facebook tonight.
Two podcasters trying to get a show. October 2nd, 1996, the Electronic Freedom of Information Act amendments are signed by U.S. President Bill Clinton.
And 19 years ago today, the...
Yeah, good luck.
Roger Dale
Rindale?
Rindale?
I don't know.
The Rindale, Renginale, or whatever. Algorithm is chosen by NIST, the AAS, as the AES standard.
You're good. You're a real security expert. Having trouble spelling AES today.
Yeah. AES.
Happy birthday on this day goes out to English anthropologist and academic Edward Burnett Tyler, born on the state in 1832.
And William Ramsay, the Scottish English chemist and academic Nobel Prize laureate, was born 167 years ago today.
Indian freedom fighter, activist, and philosopher Mahatma Gandhi was born exactly 100 and a half centuries ago. No, one and a half centuries ago today.
Yeah, one and a half. And Groucho Marx, American comedian and actor, was born on the same date in 1890.
Bud Abbott. Yep, that Bud Abbott. Well, that was actually Costello that would say that. But yeah, American comedian, he was born 122 years ago today. My goodness, we're getting old. And so are these people.
Well, yes. And American cartoonist, creator of Flash Gordon, Alex Raymond, was born on this date in 1909.
Where would we be without Flash Gordon?
I don't know. He influenced a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he did. American chemist, occultist, and engineer Jack Parsons was born 105 years ago today.
And American computer scientist and author Werner Vinge is born 75
Who knows? Huh? They didn't give a nationality, so we're going to have to guess on that one.
Yeah, Ving is born as 75 today. Excuse me.
Also born on the same date in 1945, American singer, songwriter, and guitarist Don McLean. Bye-bye, Miss American Pie.
Yeah, and... Yeah, I was
this year Anakin
guy. Every time
guy?
I think of that song, I think of the Weird Al version.
Oh yeah, this year Anakin guy.
Right. Also turning 71 today is American actor and singer Avery Brooks.
Wow, who?
71. Just watching him earlier.
He invented Cisco computer systems, right? He does the networking stuff.
Yeah, he invented the Emissary OS.
Or did he invent the Avery printing labels? Also born on that date, 1951, English singer, songwriter, bass player, and actor Sting.
That's it. Also turning 45 today is Canadian singer, songwriter, and guitarist Sam Roberts.
Not that Sam Roberts.
I was gonna say.
I had to throw that in. I have no idea who that is, but the name caught me. I'm like, Sam Roberts? Of course I'm going to put that in. And also, today is Stan Lee Day. October 3rd.
Oh, is it?
Yes. Says so on the Technorama calendar, which you can find over at chuckchat.com/Technorama. You can even subscribe to it if you want to get all these events for on this day in history and much, much more.
That's right.
So listener birthdays this week include just two, October 2nd, Adam Rumke, and October 6th, Joe Doe, John Derholt. Happy birthday to you. That's the way it was on this day in history for October 2nd, 2019. If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki, which the video has on the bottom, if you can see that at some point in your lifetime. Michael King has joined us. Hi, Michael.
Yeah.
We are going to sign it out because there's still a lot of music left. But that's the way it was on this day in history for October 2nd, 2019. Okay. We have news, right?
Yes.
Good news, everyone!
I love the reverb on that one.
It's like way over the top.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
We need a big speaker like the Blues Brothers on the top of your truck, and then I can just do that during the parade.
You know what? I'm trying to figure this out. Okay, side note. At the entrance of my neighborhood, I don't think they actually live there, but I have a feeling somebody's parents live there, because I see this car and it looks like a Lincoln Continental, kind of like a cop one, an older one.
Yes.
But it has these speaker or lights or something on the top that I look at it and I go, is that like the Blues Brothers car? And I try to get a look at it every time I go, whenever they're there. I have no idea what it is. I got to look at some pictures.
It's
I got to
some scare the deer
it.
Away. It makes an ultrasonic whistle when you go fast.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that, because right in that area when I turned in last night to come from my parents' house, there was like three or four deer in their yard.
Clearly, it doesn't work.
But one
Maybe they attract deer.
One day I'm gonna stop, because I'm like, okay, I'm considering stopping and say, what is the deal with this car? Because I want to know.
Anyway. You should bring a microphone.
Because I'm wondering, is this like a cosplay thing, like an you're not doing the Dragon Con parade that I know of.
Yeah, we pretty much see everybody because we're last.
Yeah, we're last. Yeah.
All right, Mr. Stepp, would you like the first article or the second?
Yes, I'll do this first scary article a little bit. So China's new super camera can instantly pinpoint specific targets, and I emphasize the word targets, among tens of thousands of people. So scientists have unveiled a 500-megapixel cloud camera, I'm not sure what that means exactly, system in China, that they say is capable of capturing the facial details of each individual in a crowd of tens of thousands of people, raising fears facial recognition monitoring could soon reach a new level. So the camera, which was revealed at China's International Industry Fair last week, was designed by Fudan University and Chichung Institute of Optics, Fine Mechanics, and the Physics of Chinese Academic and Sciences.
The camera rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
Yeah. We need an acronym with that. So the camera's resolution is 5 times more detailed than the human eye. And it is also equipped with artificial intelligence. Wonderful. Facial recognition, real-time monitoring, and cloud computing technology. All this means it can detect and identify human faces or other objects and instantly find specific targets, even in crowded stadium. Zhang Zen, one of the scientists who worked on the new technology, explained to reporters at an exhibition display. He said the device, dubbed the super camera by local media, can capture both stills and record video. Imagine that thing gets hot. Australian freelance technology journalist Alex Kidman said the camera was technically feasible, but there were potential difficulties. The challenge for the camera of this scope, especially in the cloud-led AI environment, is the quantity of data that is needed to shuffle around for identification. As you rise the detail level for the image, as the Fudan University scientists have done, you seriously raise the size of the files, of course, especially for video. A substantial amount, and you know that'll hit your Google Photos quota really quick. the serious technical challenge, leaning privacy concerns aside for a second, is uploading data and parsing is a sensible time frame for the kinds of applications that we're talking about, especially wirelessly. Anyway, they just go on to say, and you can see the demo of them kind of.
Yeah, it was interesting because as you watch the people walk down the street, they have all these tags next to them, but they're not even facing the camera. A lot of people are walking away.
Yeah, it's like, it looks like a Sims video game or something.
I'd love to have some AR glasses that do this. So you don't have to say, like, hi, with, you, like whatever Stark's your name glasses. Is.
Yeah. It is amazing and scary at the same time. But what's funny is it shows a bus and it's identified. It's got a little tag on the bus.
It just says not a hot dog. All the vehicles are tagged.
Not a hot dog. Yes. Maybe it identifies the type of, well, it said objects.
About the only thing that's not tagged is the road sign, oddly enough. I can't read the road sign from here.
Huh. So anyway, it said Mrs. Hoffman, one of the other people involved in this, said the data generated from the surveillance video can be fed into a pool of data that is combined with AI processing and generate tools for social control,
mm-hmm.
including tools linked in the social credit system, which is another controversy in China right now.
Might have to get one of those masks or makeup kits that distorts your face so the facial recognition can't discover who you are. You know, with the lines all over the place and fake eyes in the wrong place.
Three eyes and
right. Then it won't know who. It's the only way you're going to get privacy after this thing goes online.
But I remember they were talking about even at the Super Bowl they were doing this a couple years ago. They were people were worried about them scanning the crowd, the faces as people came in.
Like you said, in this case, it sounds like their limitation right now is processing it and getting usable information in a timely fashion. So.
It's like, hey, and those obstacles can be overcome over time, though.
Yeah, with enough monkeys and processing power.
Well, I mean, look what we were doing dial up 20 years ago. Now look where we're at. We can't get Facebook to.
We're doing much better.
We can't get Facebook to live stream our stupid show.
Well, the Chinese might be able to watch it, though. Maybe they're the ones.
Are you using one of those 500 megapixel cameras? Is that what it is?
No.
That's a webcam.
I have a traditional Logitech C920, very common on the market.
Okay.
It's not the camera. I'm convinced it's not anything that we're doing. I mean, I went from a full 1080p stream back to 720, and you know that cuts the bandwidth significantly, and it's still not working.
Yeah. So no, I think we're having a Facebook issue.
It's Facebook. So anyway,
I think we're having a Facebook issue because the audio between you and I sounds just fine.
Right. Okay. Second article we have is.
And now that we solved that.
Yeah. Jumping the gap may make electrons faster. This one intrigued me from a science standpoint. A quasi-particle that travels along the interface of a metal and dielectric material. Have we lost you yet?
Yeah. What?
Maybe the solution to problems caused by shrinking electronic components, according to an international team of engineers. Quote, microelectronic chips are ubiquitous today, said Akhlesh Lakhotia.
That was very good pronunciation.
Evan Pugh University professor and Charles Godfrey Binder professor of engineering science and mechanics. Another title that rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
Delay time for signal propagation in metal wire interconnects, electrical loss in metals leading to temperature rise, and crosstalk between neighboring interconnects arising from miniaturization and densification limits the speed of these chips. So they're saying as you get smaller and you're getting down to that electron level, you know, microns are tinier, you start to get some weird stuff that goes on because the signal traces are too close together, the time it takes to go through these, there's a latency. It's just you can only push the technology so far before you run into real physical limitations of how this stuff works. And that's where things like quantum computers is trying to make inroads to break those barriers. But I don't claim to know everything there is to know on quantum computers. If you want to know more, you can go listen to Jonathan Strickland on some of his tech stuff podcasts.
Because he's an expert.
He does his research unlike us.
He does. He does it for us. He does it so we don't have to.
These electronic components are in our smartphones, tablets, computers, and security systems, and they are used in hospital equipment, defense installations, and in our transportation infrastructure. Of course, we all know where electronics show up. Researchers have explored a variety of ways to solve the problem of connecting various miniaturized components in a world of ever-shrinking circuits. While photonics, the use of light and to transport information, is attractive because of its speed, this approach is problematic because the waveguides for the light are bigger than the current microelectronic circuits. I was thinking current not as in time, but I was thinking current as in electron flow.
Right.
It threw me off on that one. It makes the connections difficult. A pulse modulated SPP wave moving right, guided to the interface, blah, 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 technical stuff. What's going on? The researchers report in a recent issue of Scientific Reports that the signal can travel long distances without significant loss of fidelity, and that signals can possibly be transferred by SPP waves over several tens of micrometers of air in microelectronic chips. So SPPs are a group phenomenon. These are quasi-particles traveling along the interface of a conducting metal and dielectric, a non-conducting material that can support an electromagnetic field and on a macroscopic level appear as a wave. There's a cool little animated picture in here where these waves are moving slowly and then they hit the blue line and then they kind of blow up and go look completely different. So if you want to read more and really get your mind blown about how this SPP waves and the Maxwell equation is in here, and try and pronounce this guy's name, you can find that at our show notes at chuckchat.com/technorama in episode 577, because we are confused already, and we're in charge of this show. So we did find a news story. I can't remember who forwarded this to me on Facebook, but I Craig said, I think we need one more story. And this one came up and I thought, this is interesting. We've actually been to this town, haven't seen this location, but we're all about renewable energy. Well, there are some parts that wear out and they can't be renewed themselves, which is a bit ironic. So, Craig, take us into the story.
Okay. So in Casper, Wyoming, one wind farm in Glen Rock and two from Saratoga area have partnered with the Casper Regional Landfill to dispose of their old wind turbine blades, which is kind of weird.
Those are the big long ones. Sometimes you see them on the highway going down like really long trucks.
Yeah, you usually see them in a big, a bunch of them in a field. In a
big field or on the side of a hill. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, they wear out like other things. Please continue.
Sure. So more than 900 blades, well, 900, good Lord, will be brought to the landfill beginning now until the end of spring. The Casper Solid Waste Manager, Cynthia Langston, said that though the most turbine blades can be reused, there are some that are simply unrecyclable.
Because?
Because 90% of the turbines are completely reclaimed, recycled, and reused. But there's 10% that is fiberglass. So those are coming to us from three different farms in the state. Langston said that though the motor houses can be crushed, the blades are too strong. So to save space, they cut each blade into three separate parts before transporting them, then stack them on each other to be buried. Langston said that the Casper was the only facility in the region that could handle such a project. So Casper happens to be, I think it is, the biggest landfill facility in the state of Wyoming. These blades are really big, and they take up a lot of airspace, and their unlined area is very, very large, and it's going to last hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't you make an artificial fish reef out of these?
Well, why not?
That's what I'm thinking. Or maybe fiberglass doesn't make good reefs.
No, but surely you can remove the metal and stuff from the fiberglass part.
There's no metal in fiberglass.
No, didn't you just say it was different?
The fiberglass ones are the ones they can't destroy.
10% of it is fiberglass.
No, 10% of all the blades being made are fiberglass.
Oh, excuse me.
They said, though most turbine blades can be reused, there are some that are simply unrecyclable.
I thought they were talking about the material. I apologize.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well.
Seems like there's
What do you do with fiberglass body car parts and stuff? I mean,
it's small enough you can crush them. You can't put there's not a machine made that will tear these up. Isn't that bizarre?
Seems like there's got to be a better solution.
This is an ugly side of renewable energy we didn't know about.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the stress and stuff makes them unusable. I mean, just sitting there spinning around, I guess their own weight probably puts stress on the
fiberglass.
You'd
think they'd last a little longer.
yeah, that's pretty amazing. 900 blades.
And that's just three farms in one state. Where are the others?
Yeah, where are the others? Well, what about, I know when I've driven in California going north towards San Francisco, there's a bunch of wind turbines.
There's a whole bunch out on I-10 between here and Las Vegas. There's a bunch on 8 as you go to San Diego, just before you hit the hills.
Yeah.
Pass El Centro as you're going west, and boom, there they are going up the hills. They're all over the place.
Hmm. Wow. It just seems like I don't know. I wonder how part of me is wondering, because they're having to deal with 900 of them, which is a lot, if, was it worth having them? And do they generate enough electricity to pay for themselves in this trouble?
That's the other thing is, what does it take to manufacture those, and how often do they need to be replaced? I mean, this is 900. Were they saving up over the last 20 years?
Yeah.
Or is this 900 we're going to see again next year? I don't know.
Yeah. It says down here at the bottom, they're making a pretty large profit from the deal, $675,000, a little bit more than that, to be exact. So it's like they're having to pay for them to be disposed as well.
Of course they do.
I wonder, that's what I'm wondering. Was it feasible to actually have wind turbines? Did they actually pull their weight, so to speak, in paying for themselves over time?
We'll have to find out. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, we'll wait for that story to come in. Yeah, so
we'll keep it up. Yeah, that one struck me as odd. Let's take a real quick break, and we will be back with the Hacks and Strange Stories and a Remember When right after this. So stick around.
Hi, this is Grant Imahara from Mythbusters, and Myth Confirmed, you're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Greetings, programs.
And applications.
I'm Ben.
And I am Keith, and we are
the Two Gay Geeks.
We are the nerds behind TG Geeks Webcast,
where we talk about sci-fi,
comics,
film,
horror,
genre.
You name it, we talk about it.
We release an episode every Monday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern.
You can find us on iTunes, Blueberry, Spreaker, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
Also, look us up on YouTube. And of course,
we can be found at tggeeks.com, where you can find not only our webcast,
but articles about other geeky goodness.
So come along for the wildest ride in the potosphere.
Did you just say potosphere?
Go give our friends Ben and Keith a listen over at tggeeks.com. Yes. Sorry, I had to say that's it right. Just like that because that's what they say after every promo they play too. So what, if you TG listen Geeks? To their show, they'll say, go give our friends Chuck and Craig a listen.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Where sometimes they come in and take over our show.
Yeah, well, they're super supportive. We don't promote yes. them enough.
Absolutely. All right, quick shout out to the chat room, what we have left of it. Michael King,
I see three.
You and me. And because I had to do a refresh, I lost the history. So if you are watching, thank you very much, or trying to watch. Sunday nights, 9:30 Eastern is when we do this show. If not, consider hanging out with us on a Sunday night. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's even more fun when it works. I'm just not going to let that go. Just join our Facebook page, Technorama Podcast, and you'll be notified when we go on live. Thanks. And we have a Remember When, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Oh, Donna threw up the information, so we're going to tell you how to contact us anyway. Contact us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. That's 707-530-CHAT. Almost sounds like you could put that to music, right? 707-530-CHAT. That almost works.
I think I smell some karaoke music coming on.
I can karaoke parody. That's even more fun.
Yeah.
And you could send us email, of course, as always, technorama@chuckchat.com. So now can we do the Remember When?
Yes.
Remember where it is. There it is. Okay. Who just went? You just went with the wind turbines, right?
Yeah, so it's your turn.
This one's
your
turn. We don't need to
wake
roll
me up when you're done.
Dice this week. From wake space.com. I'm not sure. Is this in Remember When just because it happened? It may have happened a long time ago. Is that what we're saying?
Sure. Yes.
Okay. So the hellish planet Venus may have had a perfectly habitable environment for 2 to 3 billion years after the planet formed.
What?
Suggesting life.
Whoa. Back up. You're missing the Hacks and Strange Stories.
Did I miss Hacks and Strange Stories? We'll come back to that in a minute. All right. Sorry. Okay. I must have scrolled a little too far. What did I miss in Hacks and Strange Stories? Oh, here. Yep. Okay. Oh, now he's going to be moving things around on me, so I'm not going to look. For 2 to 3 billion years after the planet formed, suggesting life would have had ample time to emerge there, according to a new study. In 1978, NASA's Pioneer Venus spacecraft found evidence that the planet may have once had shallow oceans on its surface. Since then, several missions have investigated the planet's surface and atmosphere, revealing new details on how it transitioned from an, quote, Earth-like planet to a hot, hellish place it is today. It's believed that Venus may have been a temperate planet, hosting liquid water for 2 to 3 billion years before massive resurfacing event about 700 million years ago also triggered a runaway greenhouse effect, which caused the planet's atmosphere to become incredibly dense and hot. Researchers from NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies shared a series of 5 simulations that showed what Venus's environment would have been like based on different levels of water coverage. All 5 of the simulations suggest Venus may have been able to maintain stable temperatures ranging as low of 68 degrees Fahrenheit or 20 C to a high of 122 Fahrenheit or 50 C. Hey, it sounds like Phoenix. Although yeah. Not today.
Actually, they took part of Venus and brought it to Phoenix.
That almost rhymes. You might have another song in there.
Yeah.
Venus and Phoenix kind of rhyme. For about 3 billion years, that could have been going on, according to a statement from the Europlanet Society. Quote, our hypothesis is that Venus may have been a stable climate for billions of years, Michael Way, one of the study researchers, said in a statement. It is possible that the near global resurfacing event is responsible for its transformation from an Earth-like climate to the hellish hothouse we see today. They like that hellish hothouse idea thing.
Yeah.
Under stable climate conditions, Venus would have been able to support liquid water and in turn possibly allow life to emerge. In fact, if the planet hadn't experienced a resurfacing event, it might have remained habitable today, the researchers say. Wouldn't that have been nice? We could be going there instead of Mars, which, you know, easier to terraform. He wouldn't even have to terraform if it was Earth-like. No.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to worry
how
about
how shallow was the ocean. You could just walk through it, right?
It's actually a lot closer in Earth size than Mars. So magnetic core, atmosphere, I think we're doing a lot better. But anyway.
Hey, what's a day in Venus?
A day? I thought it was about the same, only it rotates the other way. So you'd see the sun come up in the west.
Yeah.
However, the resurfacing event triggered a series of incidents that caused a release of outgassing of carbon dioxide stored in the rocks of the planet. As a result, Venus's atmosphere, of course, became too dense and hot for life to survive, if it in fact existed there at all. Creating different simulations involved adapting a 3D general circulation model, which accounted for the atmospheric compositions as they were 4.2 billion years ago and 715 million years ago. And as they are today. So the model also accounts for the gradual increase in solar radiation as the sun gets warmer over the course of its lifetime. Yeah, that's probably going to contribute to something too. So lots of great information. Not too much more. I read about half the article. So if you want to read more about it and find out what they discovered related to volcanic activity, the sun, the carbon dioxide, all these different things that made it a big greenhouse gas planet. Too hot for us to survive, but probably where our Earth is headed now.
Yeah, hopefully years away. So
I find that in the show notes. Yeah, at least 20 years. So
20
would be good.
Yeah.
Hacks and Strange Stories.
Yes.
Please do take this.
It's, okay, let's talk about the article you skipped earlier.
What is the most mysterious song on the internet, Craig?
I'm not really sure because, to be honest with you, I wasn't too familiar with it. But let's talk about it. So 12 years ago, a catchy new wave anthem appeared on the internet with no information about who wrote it or recorded it.
AI.
Amateur detective. Yeah.
I'm going to say it was artificial intelligence.
So amateur detectives have spent thousands of hours since trying to figure out where it came from. Aliens. Aliens. Anyway, so with a little look inside the question that's been driving the internet crazy for years, which I'm not sure about. I like when they talk about things in total because
we never heard of it. So the entire internet has not been driven crazy.
You can't say the entire internet.
It's like anyway, the entire internet may have been driven crazy by Honey Boo Boo.
Yeah. So anyway, now you got to get that in my head.
You're welcome.
Thanks. With its rigid beat and dry monotone vocals, the song sounds like a synth pop hit you would have heard in a dance club
in the 80s.
The Cars. Yeah, it was a tribute to the Cars. Or at least in the 80s Spotify station. Close your eyes and you can imagine a music video, awkwardly lip-syncing musicians, exploding light bulbs, foggy streets. It's familiar. The name of the artist or the band doesn't come to mind. That's because right now no one knows anything about it, who wrote it, who sang it, or even when it came out. And for about a dozen years, a dedicated gaggle of music obsessives from around the world have been searching for information about these 3 minutes of music. Throughout this quest, which intensified this summer, thousands of man hours have been devoted to unearthing anything about what the zealous investigators are calling the most mysterious song on the internet.
Of course, now, they need a catchy marketing title for it.
Yeah.
We're going to start
thinking
calling
all those man hours. They could have solved cancer by now.
We're gonna call this the most popular podcast on the internet. How's that?
I thought we were.
Well, we haven't been using that very well, have we?
No, that's our new slogan. So
best kept secret? What?
Yeah, the best kept secret. Technorama with seven herbs and spices. So the hunt embodies every conversation anyone has ever had with a devoted music nerd, happy to share every morsel of information about an obscure song. In this case, one supposedly taped off a European radio about 35 years ago. It's the story of people longing for a community in the digital era because it's something bigger. Yeah, because the whole internet's talking about it. Everything about the song is mysterious, from the creation to the lyrics to where it played on the radio, says amateur detective McGill, M-K-L-L.
Mickle.
Mickle. He's a cousin to Nickel. One who prefers to be identified only by his internet handle, of course. It is not too often that songs of this age are dug up, and the fact that search has been happening for over a decade on the internet really made this case unique. Even if the case is never solved, it has briefly returned the pre-Google mystique to music.
Wait a minute. If we don't know where it came from, then technically we could play it because there's no copyright on it. So I want to hear this. I've never heard this before. I'll do the Michael Butler thing. It's kind of got the, not Night Ranger. What am I looking for right there? The guitars. You're right. It is very familiar.
It does sound like anything I've heard from the 80s. Or, you know, like a B-side almost. Yeah.
Is it English? I don't even know what they're saying.
Know what anybody's saying in the lyrics? You do know.
that's the fun of karaoke.
Yeah.
When you get to actually learn the words, and go, no, seriously, is that what it said?
I'm still baffled by the big hands thing. Big hands, I know you're the one. I think that's what he said.
All right, if we are to believe what some fervent people involved, we may know where the story starts between 1982 and 1984, Darius S., who asked to use an abbreviation for this article to take a sake of privacy, says he was a teenage music fan in the town of Wilhelmshaven in the northeast coast of Germany. Like many of the pre-streaming area, he would record songs he heard on the radio to a cassette deck. Yes, we all have fun doing that.
Yes.
One of his go-to programs was Music for Junge Leute, I think. Music for Young People on the German public radio station NDR1. One of those tapes, which was Darius calls Cassette 4. Or, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. Got to count German on my fingers. It includes the new songs from 1984 by XTC, The Cure, and one of 25 cuts Darius deemed his unknown pleasures, in quotes. Songs he liked but knew little about. I used to record stuff like that. Just go, hey, this sounds cool. I'll record it.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it was popular, and sometimes you got like a one-hit wonder that was only around for about 2 weeks, never even made it on the top 40. And now I'm the only one who remembers that song because I would play it over and over on that cassette. You wear that one out.
Yeah. You're the torchbearer.
I
haven't listened to XTC in a long time. I used to really like them.
There is a lot of info on here, but I don't think they actually get down to the answer of who this is.
No, I don't think they know. That's just it.
Okay, so we're bringing it to your attention because it came to our attention.
Wow, yeah, so now we can carry that on for another 12 years.
And you know what? I think there's going to be a meme. Just put some words to it. This is a song No one knows who we are. This here song.
Didn't start the fire.
Start it on fire. Someone's going to fire us. Off.
My soul's on
We're
fire.
We're going to get fired. Because no one's listened since. Anyway, let's give thank you to our patrons.
Yes.
Play something else. There we go. Thank you to you, you people who donate as little as a dollar a show to keep this show going, because we have hardware, we have software, we have hosting, we have domain registration. It's crazy the stuff that goes on. And thank you. Thank you very much for helping offsetting the cost of this. You can go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. Donna has put the title down there by pushing the new button on her little control panel. That was very, very fun.
It works.
Thank you, Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman. Thank you, Ben Vaughn. Thank you, Mike Wills and Megapodtastic. Thank you very much, Night Gig Studios and Gary Lindros and John Clifford and Leon. Thank you very much, John Noble.
What? Who?
Yes, exactly. Chris okay. MC, Alexis Duran. Thank you, Saturday Morning Media and Steve Therian. We love you very much, Jorga Schrawin and John Miller Jr. Greatly appreciated from Amber Elstad. I'm running out of tags here, but we'll keep going. Undying appreciation to Harold McKinstry, Amy Bowen, Denise Inglis, Stephen.
Wetschi.
Yes, Wetschi. Thank you.
We'll get it right one of these days, Stephen.
Dean Jensen, Dandyman Coyer, NCAF1. And very much appreciated, Matt Baum. Thank you. I almost had to pull the birthday calendar and go look. It's like, what was it again?
Wetschi.
They all get super secret content as well. They go to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. And
read the URL right there.
We record a show right after this one. It's released before, but we record it after on special topic. It is not as production, less production than what you get here.
Hey, open conversation. Don't undersell it.
No. It's raw. It's uncut. It's unedited. You get the true grit of techno. Oh, is that better?
Sure. Now it sounds like we're talking about some bum fights or some kind of
wrestling.
Yeah.
One more article and then I say we call it a night. What do you think?
Let's do it.
All right.
Thanks, Facebook. Hey, speaking of Facebook, there's Zuckerberg's mug right there on the article.
Muckerberg. Okay. Why is he on? Go ahead.
Okay. You want me to take it?
From ZDNet. So Google's, yes.
So auto start audio. I can't stand that. Mute site. Google's war on deepfakes as election looms. It shares a ton of AI faked videos, and there's a good reason for that. So, you know, the deepfakes, which we pointed out a few here and there, are the ones where they have several images of somebody, and they're able to map that face to something else.
We did one last week on Star Trek Nemesis and Jean-Luc Picard. Getting on. Yeah. Okay.
And it looks very convincing in a lot of ways. So Google has released a huge database of deepfake videos that it created using paid actors. It hopes the database will bolster systems designed to detect AI generated fake videos. So they flooded it to be able to identify or give people a sample to be able to identify fake ones. So with the 2020 US president election looming, presidential election, excuse me.
This could be a big problem.
It could be a big problem. The race is on to build a better system to detect deepfake videos that could be used to manipulate and divide public opinion. Early this month, Facebook and Microsoft announced a $10 million project to create deepfake videos to help build systems for detecting them. Just kind of weird. They build the system for deep fakes, and they have to build another system to detect the deep fakes.
It's like the virus and the antivirus people working together.
Yeah. So as Facebook noted at the time, one of the issues with detection systems is that there isn't much material to work with to create one and to act as a benchmark for testing. So that project is also using paid actors to create a larger data set. Google and Alphabet's Jigsaw, I guess Jigsaw is a project that Alphabet is working on, are contributing to a data set of 3,000 manipulated videos with 28 actors to the new Face Forensic Benchmark, which aims to become the automated benchmark for facial manipulation detection. The benchmark is being developed by researchers at the Technical University of Munich and the University of Federico II, it's a sequel, of Naples. Federico II.
I don't know if that's a two or if it's a capital I and a lowercase l. It might be il, which is common in Italian. But anyway.
Oh, okay. Google calls the videos the deep fake detection data set. That rolls off the tongue too. Well, these people need to work on names.
The DFDD.
Yeah, we call it the deep fake detection data set. Details.
Just call it about Federico.
The face forensics benchmarks can be accessed at the researcher's GitHub page. Anyway, you can go look, and they have a, there's an animated GIF towards the bottom with a bunch of
people,
you know, a bunch of them kind of as a, just a showcase. You can
are these
see them.
The fakes or are these the reals?
How do you know?
Exactly. Hey, wait a minute. Some of these people are on here multiple times. That lady with the peach sweater thing collar. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple of them that look somewhere. Yeah, I'm not sure what that is exactly, but I assume that's a, it's just a, it's probably some of the fake ones that they're in the data set. So you can go look there. It's an open, thing. It said it's on GitHub, so you can go check it out.
Alrighty. We got to solve that problem. Otherwise we could be manipulated in the next election again.
Yeah. Actually, if you go to the GitHub, page,
yes,
they have some information in the README about all this. And there's, they talk about the natural textures, the deep fake detection data set, and there's a lot of information here. So
this whole podcast is a deep fake.
What we need to do is just set up, just record the audio, and we'll deep fake, we'll put like Brad Pitt and
Years after you and I are dead, we can still be doing podcasts because there's enough audio and video material out there that somebody could just generate the AI, still keep looking for crazy stories and read them.
Actually, I think maybe I should be Brad Pitt and you can be Denzel Washington. And we'll have our pictures. That work for you? You're in Phoenix. I figure your tan's probably.
I was going to say, how am I pulling off a Denzel Washington?
I don't know. You're talented.
Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
Years after the two boys had left the podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
Alrighty. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for hanging out with us once again. We appreciate it very much. If you want to find out more about us, you can go over to chuckchat.com/technorama. Leave us a message on the listener line, 707-530-CHAT. 707-530-CHAT. I'm going to start doing that now.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, it's a good time. Technorama@chuckchat.com. You can find this and all the other information, as I mentioned, over on our website. Thank you, Craig, for hanging out with us. Thank you very much to my lovely wife, Donna, for doing all the video and subtitles and all that cool stuff that happens.
Allow me to thank her as well. She does.
Go right ahead. She's listening. She's got headphones
on. Thank you, Donna. I'm waving at you. Thank you, Donna.
Smile, thumbs up. She's waving back, but doesn't have a camera, sadly. Doesn't want to be on the show. All right. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and Craig, give us that traditional binary high five sign off.
All right. 101, everybody.
Bye.